Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com with Paul Dottino. I'm John Schmoke. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Now, it's going to be a tight show today, folks, to get in your calls. We're going to do the best we can, but we have two guests. We have Dave Spadaro coming your way in about 3 or 4 minutes to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and what they've done so far in the draft and in the offseason. But then at 12:30, guests both Paul and I are very excited about. Props to Lance Meadow for reaching out and getting this done. Yeah. Lincoln Riley, Sterling Shepard's offensive coordinator from Oklahoma, will be joining us on the phone, and we'll try to get some insight of exactly what he did at Oklahoma. And, Paul, we can kind of dive in a little bit deeper than even some of the stuff we've done already so far on Sterling Shepard.
Yeah, you know, I'm really interested to hear about his coach's perspective as to not only what did Shepard do really well from his angle, because remember now, he's drawn up the plays, so he knows what plays the guy likes. He knows what plays he's really good at. He knows what plays maybe they shied away from and where he'll have to develop here in the NFL. But the other thing that I'm really, really curious about is not just the kid's mentality in terms of as a player, but I'm also interested from the coach's perspective what he saw other teams do to him defensively. Because remember, part of what the coordinator's doing is he's anticipating, what are those guys going to do? I want to know what his thoughts are in terms of how teams tried to guard Shepard, how they were most effective in doing it. There's a lot of great stuff I think we're going to be able to get out of him.
And I think one thing I want to focus on too, Paul, is what he's like off the field, because that's something we can't see from watching him on tape, watching him in Oklahoma, how he learns, how quickly he picks things up. And that might give us a clue as to how quickly he could adjust to the NFL and work in a West Coast-style offense.
This may be the most revealing interview that you're going to get about Sterling Shepard. The newspaper guys, I get it, but I don't think they had access like this. This is really good access.
Oh, absolutely, and it's the same type of stuff that we got from Eli Apple's defensive coordinator, yeah. Now the head coach of Rutgers, Chris Ash, on our Friday night show of the draft, and we're going to try to get some other guys down the road as well. I believe you guys have someone set up for Monday, too, correct?
From Boise State, who's going to tell us all about Darian Thompson.
Right. So we got a lot of good guys coming up here, folks. Stay tuned to Big Blue Kickoff Live as we move forward. Again, we'll have Lincoln Riley at 12:30. Make sure you tune in for that. We'll be joined by Dave Spadaro in a second. Paul, real quick, we haven't hosted together in a while. This is kind of the slow time of the year for football at this point. We'll get some OTAs in a couple of weeks. That's great. We'll get mandatory minicamp, but no big news, no big changes. What are you keeping an eye on over the next month as the Giants get ready to break camp in June and then come back for training camp in end of July, start of August?
John, I hate to say, but one of the things I'm going to keep an eye on is something we've been keeping an eye on for a while during these kinds of times, and that is Victor Cruz. I need to know that everything still
you
looks
need to
like,
know.
Yeah. I need to know that things still look like they're going right. Pretty good. And to this point, they are. You know, John, I keep telling folks who ask me about him, and they ask me about him all the time, and I'm sure you get the same thing on the street, too, whenever you're walking around. Everybody wants to know, is he ready? Is he going to play? And I say to them, folks, here's what I tell you. I think to this point, all systems look good. The green light seems to be on. But my goodness, you were out there at practice last year, too.
He looked great.
He looked like he hadn't missed a step.
Hey, if you listen to the show, I was more convinced than anybody that he was going to come back and have a good year last year. He looked great.
He turned me from being, let's wait and see, to, oh, boy, he's going to be as good as ever.
And that's not just our eyes. The Giants' GPS system told them the same facts.
It was all there.
Exactly. And then you have to just wait and see.
Blindsided.
You have to wait to see. Not even when he gets out there and goes full. To see how he reacts the day after, 2 days after he goes full, maybe back-to-back days. That's when you need to figure things out.
So anyway, that's why I continue to look and monitor that, because at any time it could go awry, so I'm cautious.
We say goodbye to our friends on Twitter. You guys can go to Giants.com. We'll be joined by Dave Spadaro in just a moment. Fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. And our first guest of the show is Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Dave, you got John Schmoke and Paul Dottino with you in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us today. How's everything going down there in the city of brotherly love?
I tell you, it's honestly, it's quiet, and that's really nice after some of these off seasons that the Eagles have had. Today, I will say, is a quiet, peaceful football day.
Very good. And I want to get into it. And I guess when you talk about the Eagles this offseason, you have to start the quarterback position. Bradford's back in camp, which at least to me and Paul was not a surprise. We didn't really think he had any other options. And I realize this is completely, I guess it would be rhetorical almost. And it's a question that, you know, you can't really give an answer to. But hypothetically speaking, Dave, do you think, knowing what they know now, if the Eagles could go back in a little time machine, would they have signed both Chase Daniel and Sam Bradford, given that they drafted Carson Wentz? Or do you think they'd rather just have two of them, or do you think they're happy to have all three on the roster?
I mean, I'm going to take the safe answer and give you the latter choice. They know that Sam Bradford gives them a chance to win this year,
yeah,
perhaps next year, depending on how long it takes Carson Wentz to develop. They've got a coach/quarterback in Chase Daniel here. Yes, they've invested a lot of resources into the quarterback position. But understand that this is a team that has not won a playoff game since 2008. And they understand the value of having stability at the position. Since Donovan McNabb fell off the mountaintop a bit, you know, they've gone through Kevin Cobb and Michael Vick and Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles and Sam Bradford, and it's just not working. So I think you look at it and you see the state of the NFC East, and you feel like Sam Bradford made some really good strides last year, and he's got a two-year contract. He's got an opportunity to really reestablish himself as a trusted, healthy, productive quarterback. And that's what they're doing. In the meantime, they can bring along a prospect that they think the world of in Carson Wentz at the right pace and not throw him out there too early.
Dave, I'm going to ask you a question which seems loaded, but I'm going to preface it by giving you a little background on the question. I remember when the Giants brought in Eli Manning, and you'll recall that they had signed free agent veteran Kurt Warner, and Kurt was going to be the placeholder. But everybody knew that, you know, hey, Ernie, of course, he spent the world to bring Eli Manning in here.
Very similar to what the Eagles have done.
Right.
Yeah.
He was going to be the guy. And if not sooner, certainly later, and for the foreseeable decade, if not more. You've got a similar situation there in Philadelphia. I can tell you that there were a lot of Giants players who, while they would not verbalize it, they certainly looked at this with a little bit of a squinty eye, saying, my goodness, Eli wound up replacing Warner during that rookie season, and they lost themselves a chance of going to the playoffs. And there were a lot of guys in that locker room who said, we might have been just better off either keeping Kerry Collins or at least keeping Kurt Warner in for the full season without cowtailing to the young phenom. Have you in any way seen a similar situation in Philadelphia where there may be some feelings in that locker room that are not la-di-da, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread that we did this?
I honestly believe this. I mean, I think players, certainly at this point in May, are really focused on themselves and understanding that most of these players don't have guarantees, right? So they're looking for just jobs. They want to get paychecks this year. They want to be on a roster. They want to be on this roster. And they also know that Carson Wentz hasn't even picked up a football yet. And they also know that 50% of the rookies statistically, historically, factually, don't make it in the NFL. And I think that I don't think players look 2 and 3 years down the line. Like you said, I think the players recognize that Sam Bradford is the best quarterback right now on this roster. And so, you know, it's really a day-by-day proposition, week-by-week proposition in the NFL, as you guys know. So, I mean, look, the Eagles went out in free agency and they signed a lot of players. And they brought in some players who were likely to be immediate starters. And that's, you know, Brandon Brooks, offensive lineman, and potentially Reuben Randall, wide receiver, and Nigel Bradham at linebacker, and Leotis McKelvin at cornerback, et cetera, and Rodney McLeod at safety. So the Eagles believe, now, whether you say this is, you know, a poppycock idea, the Eagles believe that they can contend in 2016 for a playoff spot. And then at the same time, still have a young roster, developing roster, and then eventually, someday down the line, when and if, certainly when is the belief, Carson Wentz is ready to play, he will be the quarterback here. Sam Bradford has a two-year contract. He's the starting quarterback. How can you look too far into the future with a guy like Bradford who's been hurt so much? So I do believe that right now everybody believes that Sam Bradford's the best quarterback for this football team.
Yeah, I don't want to do too much season preview here because I think we're going to have you on again as we get closer to training camp in July, Dave. But I think one interesting part of this transition for Philadelphia, and I'd love to get your take on it, is going from, you know, Chip Kelly to the new coaching staff, the new player personnel decision maker, and how they're going to integrate some of the younger players Chip Kelly brought in into this new system. One example, Nelson Agholor, for example.
Yeah.
How do you see some of these young players that you guys are going to count on to produce that were brought in here by a different guy to work in a different system, adjusting to this West Coast system that they're going to run this year?
So I'll go back a year earlier. Marcus Smith, the linebacker slash defensive end, really a tweener, which I kind of wonder if that means that you don't fit in either a linebacker role or a defensive end role. He'll now be a defensive end. It's a huge transition for him. Really a crossroads season for a 2014 first-round draft pick. Connor Barwin brought in here to play stand-up outside linebacker, did a great job here. Now he's going to be asked to put his hand in the ground. Huge transition for him. But Chip was only here for 3 years, so there were a lot of players here prior to that, particularly on the defensive side, who played in the 3-4, rather the 4-3, which they go back to. I don't sense that the transition will be as difficult on the defensive side with Jim Schwartz. I think this defense, honestly, has a pretty good chance to be competitive and really aggressive and successful. On the offensive side, look, I think they're going to benefit from going to a more traditional offense where they're not just blowing out people on the offensive line. I mean, in retrospect, the tempo of the offense was really detrimental to players like left tackle Jason Peters, exhausted at the end of the season. Jason Kelce, the center, exhausted. I mean, when you look at the way the Eagles, who finished really strong, 7-2 or 7-1 down the stretch in the second half of 2013, I mean, they fell apart in December of 2014, fell apart when the division was there for the grabbing. In 2014, they were 9-3 and fell apart down the stretch, finished 10-6. So Nelson Agholor, look, I'm not telling you it's the scheme, but clearly the offensive numbers went way down in the 3 years that Chip was here progressively. And somebody like Nelson Agholor will benefit from having a wide receiver coach who is a stickler for details. They slow it down at practice. They're not rushing to get to the next play. If you make a mistake, they are working on why did you make the mistake? Let's work on this so you don't make the mistake the next time.
Interesting.
So I think some of those players are really, really going to benefit from the coaching change and just kind of going back to more traditional football rather than what we all saw was a radical departure from what most of the rest of the NFL does.
We understand that this was a quality draft in terms of they were not interested in quantity when they made the trade to move up to get Wentz, but you're looking at 6 third-day picks, which on a lot of people's boards, some of those guys are just flat-out risks and shots in the dark. You got the center there in the third round, which obviously is a make-it guy. But,
He'll play left guard, and he'll compete for a starting job at left guard.
Okay, I expect that. Yeah. Samalo, yeah. I believe. I'm not sure exactly how he says it. So I expect him, obviously, to be an immediate contributor. But beyond that, you're talking about 6 guys who were taken on the third day. Is there anyone there who's caught your eye to this point or that you're hearing whispers about in the hallways that, hey, boy, we really think that we got a good one here?
Yeah, Wendell Smallwood, a running back from West Virginia, 5th-round draft pick. Eagles in an interesting situation at running back, dealing DeMarco Murray, obviously. They've got Ryan Matthews, who's had trouble, frankly, staying healthy in the NFL.
Yeah.
Really talented player. So he and Darren Sproles and Kenyon Barner and now Smallwood, kind of a running back by committee. But remember the perspective of the head coach. Now, Doug Peterson last year was the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. Jamaal Charles goes down, and the Chiefs go on to win, what, 11 straight games, 12 straight games, whatever it was?
Yeah.
So he understands that you can get by at running back without that quote-unquote workhorse superstar 25-carry-a-game player. But Wendell Smallwood certainly is somebody who the Eagles will give a long look to in the backfield. So those two I expect to be the most immediate contributors. And then some of those late-round picks perhaps help on special teams, but it is just far too early to tell. And I think, guys, that's why the Eagles were so aggressive, not necessarily going after like the Giants. The Giants were really aggressive in free agency, and they signed the big contracts, the big names, the impact super kind of players that they expect to be really star players. The Eagles, on the other hand, signed players who and some of whom will be starters, and I think four or five of those players they signed in free agency: Rodney McLeod at safety, Nigel Bradham at linebacker, Leotis McKelvin at cornerback, Brandon Brooks at offensive guard should be immediate starters and play well on this team.
And, you know, Dave, I think they did similar things on defense in terms of addressing specifically the secondary. And I think the one strategy I like from Philadelphia, and really I think it's the one that provides stability in the NFL these days and helps you win long term, is that they're focusing on re-signing their own players. You saw a slew of contract extensions before the free agent period hit from you guys. And then they're supplementing those guys with some smaller free agent signings. The Otis McKelvins, the Nolan Carrolls, you got Eric Rowe going into his second year. It seems like the secondary seems to be taking form, and that's something that, at least from my perspective, you tell me if I'm wrong, that they've really been trying to solidify by bringing different guys in at corner and other positions over the last few years.
Yeah, cornerback's been an area that they just, you know, it's a tough position to find. They think that Rowe is going to be a really good player in his second season. The days of the Nnamdi Asomugha and Byron Maxwell, they tried to solve it with the big dollar free agent cornerback, did not work. So they figure they can bring in the numbers, as many as they have here, and they do have a lot of cornerbacks. In addition, Ron Brooks, who was a free agent from the Buffalo Bills, they've got Ja'Cory Shepherd, a sixth-round draft pick last year, blew out his knee. He's back. So there are a lot of candidates, but they really don't have that star player. They're really going to have to develop that player and also hope that the Jim Schwartz wide nine, which historically has been really, really productive getting to the quarterback, if they can create that pass rush up front, clearly that's going to help in the secondary. And I'm telling you, maybe the best free agent they signed is somebody that nobody ever talks about, safety Rodney McLeod. He and Malcolm Jenkins seem to have really connected early. And the Eagles, since the days of Brian Dawkins and since he left in 2008, they've been siphoning through all of these safeties that just haven't worked for the long term.
I'm going to ask you about another free agent, Dave, and it kind of puzzles me what's going on with him. In fact, we even heard talk that he might retire. Walter Thurmond, who was here for a very short time with the Giants, then he got hurt right away, and that was the end of that, and then obviously converted to safety for Philly last year. I thought that went pretty well, and I was very surprised in March when there were talks about him potentially retiring. What do you know about his situation right now?
Yeah, he's not signed. There's no interest. I think he is retiring. And getting to know Walter last year, as perhaps you guys did the year before, really interesting man.
Oh, yeah.
Interested in filmmaking and all of these entrepreneurial endeavors. And he stayed healthy. The unusual part of it, he'd been so star-crossed with the injuries, he finally stayed healthy last year, played really well.
He did.
Set himself up for what I thought would be a nice payday, and instead has said, look, I don't really want to play football anymore. I love it. I just don't want to commit myself to it.
Do you think that is more of a contract ploy, or knowing him,
no,
he had other things on his mind?
No, the contract ploys, I mean, at this point, anybody who's a free agent has no leverage. So
that's true.
They are. I don't think it's at all ploy. I think Walter just wants to seek other interests that stimulate his brain.
You know, Fletcher Cox, Dave, to me, it might be a top three defensive lineman in the league. He's that good. He obviously wants to get paid that way. The Eagles made according to reports, made a very competitive offer to him. But right now, you know, he's still on pace to become a free agent. I think this move to a 4-3 is going to help him. You put him as a three-technique defensive tackle, he could be a terror on all three downs from that spot. What do you see from Fletcher Cox in this transition, and what do you think the long-term probability is that the Eagles and him get something done to keep him there for a long time?
I think there's no question that they will get something done. I think it's a really difficult negotiation. It is, you know, top of the food chain money that they're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's guarantees. It's the structure of the deal. There's so many intricacies here that the Eagles have no intention at all of having Fletcher Cox leave this team. A long-term deal will get done. It is just a matter of time. And, you know, it's just one of those things where everybody just wishes it would get done yesterday. I just think it's so complex that it's getting people just a little bit nervous out there.
And your thoughts on him playing full-time in that 4-3 defensive front?
Oh, I think he's going to kill.
Yeah, I agree.
He was drafted to be a 4-3, 3 technique, and, you know, the fact that he was able to turn that into such success that he had playing in the three-down lineman role as an end, I mean, he's just a special defensive lineman. And in this defense with Jim Schwartz and going up the field and the way he attacks, you know, Fletcher should be just great in this scheme. And really, he's been great in every scheme. And I think everybody just wants to get him in here and get him really focused on football, make sure he's in great shape for 2016.
Dave, final question for me. What about of the rookie undrafted free agents who every team has had in now for the last week or so? Is there anybody there who kind of caught your eye, who maybe you thought should have been drafted and somehow fell through and the Eagles were able to bring him into camp?
Yeah, well, I don't really know. I mean, the rookie camp begins this weekend. So
Is later.
I think they went out and signed a couple of offensive linemen and defensive linemen that they really were aggressive with in terms of some of the bonuses that they paid to those players. But they're deep along the offensive line now. They drafted two players. They signed two in free agency. Going to be a very competitive situation there. And I think the defensive line is pretty strong, particularly in the interior. So, I mean, I kind of like reserve judgment on what those players did in college. I want to see how they fit in and how well they're coached and how they get accepted into coaching. But they feel like they got a couple of players who really will push for roster spots.
And, Dave, final question for me. Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. It's kind of been a quest, it seems like, for Philadelphia to find a couple of guards to put between their tackles, which they like, and their center that they really like. Are they feeling pretty confident that they finally found those, you know, two long-term answers at guard this offseason?
Certainly at right guard, Brandon Brooks, formerly of the Houston Texans, was a massive, you know, just a major day one priority in free agency. They got him signed to a 5-year deal. So, yeah, that's somebody they think of. He's a really big, strong player. Will make Lane Johnson a lot better on the edge. Will make Jason Kelce, an undersized center, a lot better in the middle. Defense is kind of blew up Jason Kelce last year because of the weaknesses on either side. Alan Barber comes back as a left guard. He'll have some competition from Stefan Wisniewski, who has been a starter at center in the NFL. And then Isaac Seumolo, the third-round pick, should also compete at the left guard position. And, you know, they feel really good about him. But, I think the Eagles understood that last year they got their butts kicked up front along the offensive line. The running game was really stagnant. The pass protection was okay. But, by and large, the offense was a shell of what it had been 2 years earlier when Chip came in and the Eagles led the league in big plays and explosive plays, pass plays. The run game led the league. I mean, it was really a dynamic offense. They knew they needed to build the offensive line. And they think they did it. Now, the key to me, can you get another really top-notch year from Jason Peters at age 34?
Dave, before we say goodbye, real quick, general question, because I get the sense of every fan of every team in the NFC East that they're all thinking, you know what? We can go out and win this division this year. What's the confidence level? It's true.
I know.
What's the confidence level like from Eagles fans thinking about their chance of winning the NFC East?
I think Eagles fans have a bit of bifurcated feelings at this point. One of the really strong emotions is, wow, we have a chance to have a quarterback in place for the next 10 or 12 years. The reaction to Carson Wentz has been as positive from Eagles fans as any first-round draft pick that I can remember in 25 years. I mean,
wow.
He says it all. He's been a really impressive kid. I met him. He's easy to fall in love with. You know, now we'll see what he does on the football field and see how he picks up the offense. And then the other sense is that, you know, there was certainly a lot of emotion when Sam left this voluntary period for 2 weeks. He's back now. How long will that linger in the fans' minds? I think from a team side, it's really been a non-issue. It happens a lot, you know, in the NFL.
Yeah,
players
handle
their business in the offseason, but Sam's back now. I think it's a wait-and-see approach from the Eagles fans to think that a new coach, a lot of new faces, a quarterback who's been injured a lot, can you put it all together and scratch out 10 wins and take an NFC East that I think we all would agree is there for the taking? I mean, Washington is the incumbent, a champion. They're the team to beat. They had a strong offseason. The Giants made a lot of really positive free agent acquisitions, seemed to draft well, but they also have a new coaching staff. And then Dallas's hopes hinge on a quarterback who's had trouble staying healthy and a defense that really didn't seem to add any significant pieces in the offseason. I think it's wide open. I think fans feel that. I'm just not sure that they know what they have here in Philadelphia on May 12th.
Well, Dave, you got a new coaching staff. You got a young quarterback to watch. OTAs and minicamp are going to be a hell of a lot of fun for you. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you in a couple months.
Thank you, Dave.
Anytime, guys. Thank you so much.
He's our good buddy, Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com, and we'll keep an eye on the phone line. You should be hearing from Lincoln Riley, offensive coordinator from Oklahoma, in a couple minutes. I'm not going to try to squeeze in any calls before Lincoln. I want to get him on, get him out, and then we'll take your calls at the end of the show. And, Paul, let's just review a little bit some of the stuff we talked to Dave about. You know, the Eagles have struggled at those guard spots on the offensive line. They've struggled at corner in the secondary. Those are kind of, you know, the Giants have their areas where they've struggled figuring things out the last couple years. Those have really been the areas for Philadelphia, and it'll be interesting to see now with the new coaching staff, with a more traditional scheme, with the new players, how all that pans out. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Eagles won 6 games. I wouldn't be surprised if they won 9 or 10 games. I have a hard time placing where they're going to fall here.
And I don't blame you one bit for feeling that way, John. In fact, right now I'm just trying to call up their schedule because I think that's important to note. When you're talking about a new coaching staff and you're talking about guys trying to buy in and trying to mesh into what they want to do, the schedule is extremely important. My bad for not calling that up earlier, because I do think that, you know, what happens with a new staff, if you get off to a bad start, now they really have to work doubly hard to earn the confidence of the players. And so the beginning of their schedule is going to be very, very important. Let's see what they got. They're going to start out with time to go.
Yes.
Okay.
We have our guest in the line. We'll revisit this conversation in a minute, but I want to bring in Lincoln Riley, offensive coordinator for the Oklahoma Sooners. He had the honor of coaching Sterling Shepard last year. We welcome him to Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Coach, you got John Schmelk, you got Paul Dottino up here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm great, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, we appreciate you giving us
the time
and coming on and
sharing
some stuff on Sterling Shepard. We had a brief chance to meet him last week. Seems like a real wonderful kid. What was your experience with him on the field and off during your year in Oklahoma with him?
Well, I was just here with him his senior year, but he's an incredible person. You know, first thing, he's a guy that his teammates are going to love him. I think you guys in the media will enjoy covering him. I think the cities, will really embrace him. He's just got an infectious personality it's really good for the team. He's a great competitor. He's one of the great competitors that I've ever coached. He's an incredibly explosive kid, can do so many things well on the football field. And on top of that, he's very, very physical. Was a dynamic playmaker for us, all year, and always seemed to show up, in crunch time and in the biggest moments. And so, I think I also think too that he's a kid that his ceiling is still much higher than where he's at right now. I think he improved a lot during his senior year. Obviously improved his draft stock and his draft position, a lot throughout the last, the last 12 months. But I think his best football is certainly ahead of him, and I think he's got a chance to be a great Giant.
Well, Coach, we could tell that you liked getting him the ball, the 86 catches for nearly 1,300 yards and 11 touchdown grabs as a senior. What are the kinds of things that you enjoyed using him for, the kinds of routes, the kinds of different things that you knew he could get done, and what did defenses at least try to do to limit him?
Well, they tried a lot. They didn't do a very good job of it. He's one of those guys, honestly, and I know he's a little shorter than, some of the prototypical receivers, but there's very little that this guy can't do. A lot of people coming out, tagged him as just a slot receiver because of his size, but I think those people didn't, or guys that just looked at his size and didn't watch the tape, because this guy, was equally as effective, getting outside, going against bigger corners, and having his way with those guys. And so, he can play inside, he can play outside. He was a guy that was able to, catch a lot of short stuff for us and then turn it into big plays. He's really tough to tackle, again, because of his combination of quickness, of just how fast twitch he is, and then the fact that he's very powerful and is powerful enough to run through tackles as well. But he's also got deceptive speed. He won over the top a lot for us. Down the field, made a lot of plays. He's a great blocker, which I know is not what everybody wants to hear. But
oh, the coaches here do. They want to hear that.
Oh, we do. But I know sometimes those fans don't. But I'm telling you, he's a difference making blocker. I mean, he is. He's nasty. He will create a lot of big plays in that too. So There's very little that this guy can't do, and like I said, he's got a heart and a competitive nature that I'd put up with anybody.
Now, Coach, it is so often said that the speed of whether or not you're playing high level D1 ball to the NFL is going to be a bit of an adjustment. How well do you think his talents will adjust to that? And then the other thing is, what do you think physically he may have to do to perhaps get a little bit stronger even when you're dealing with some of these NFL players?
Well, he's not going to have to get stronger. He's going to, I mean, not that he won't, but he's strong. He's strong by NFL standards. And so that's, okay. You know, strength and playing fast are not going to be, is it going to be a higher level of competition, you know, with that? Of course it is, but those are this guy's two strengths. I mean, he played so much faster than the guys at the D1 level that I think, you know, I don't think that's going to be an issue for him. I think it'll just be, you know, like anybody, learning the offense, getting settled into the NFL game, the NFL way of life. I mean, just I think all those things will be maybe even tougher for him than the stuff on the field. But those are the normal adjustments that you have to make, and the normal things that you see rookie wide receivers to me go through when they're making that transition. This guy, I think, is equipped to handle it better than most.
Coach, I want to jump back to something you said in your last answer very quickly. We're joined by Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma Sooner offensive coordinator, Coach Sterling Shepard last year. You talked about how you used him both inside and outside. Most people that, you know, work on the draft around the NFL considered him maybe the most polished receiver coming out of college this year, pro-ready because he was really adept at running the entire route tree, something that many collegiate wide receivers don't do anymore given the spread offense. Not the case with Sterling Shepard. How do you view him as a route runner and his adjustment to the NFL where you do have to run that entire route tree? Will he be able to make a pretty smooth transition given what he did for you guys at Oklahoma?
Absolutely. You know, one is physically he's got the skills to do it, and he came a long ways as a route runner for us. You know, what we came in and did this year offensively was, you know, quite a bit different than what they had done at Oklahoma the previous few years, and I think it challenged him and He got a lot better really quickly. And the thing this guy can do, which you got to be able to do, especially in the NFL, is he can separate from man coverage. I mean, the guy is so quick and explosive that, you know, we were praying for people to play him in man, because he just not only did he beat people, he would beat them just so bad that, you know, a lot of times that's where his big plays would come after the catch, is because he won by so much on the route that's where it came. And so he's tough to handle in man coverage situations, and I think he really developed a lot as far as having a feel, you know, when you play the zone teams and where the different soft spots are. And so, yeah, you know, I think that's, you know, a compliment to him and a compliment to, you know, the way that we're doing things, that he was so polished coming out. And, again, I think you guys got a great one.
Well, Coach, I can tell you, we already witnessed some of that running away from defensive backs at a rookie minicamp last week. He had some separation, especially off that line of scrimmage. You mentioned twice now how much improvement he made in his senior year. What type of learner is he? Because a lot of the adjustments these players have to make going from college to the NFL is the big playbook, the classroom time, you know, knowing the plays, being in sync with the quarterback, being right place, right time, all that stuff. How do you expect him to make that adjustment to the NFL notebook? How do you think he's going to be able to handle that challenge mentally?
I think he'll do well, you know, and a lot of that depends on, you know, the system you're going into and who's coaching you and all that. And obviously, they, you know, have done a great job there, and they'll have an Eli and those guys there to, and some experienced receivers around him will, you know, will help him. But no, learning I don't think will be an issue for this kid. He's a smart kid, and two, it's important to him. I mean, this is the guy that's going to go home at night and study that deal until he knows it like the back of his hand. And so, you know, he picked up a. For our receivers, it's our system, you know, can be complex. Not complex isn't the best word, but it takes a lot of time to master it, I guess, is just a better answer or a better way to describe it. And he did it, you know, in 1 year. He did a great job. And it reminds me a lot of, I actually coached Dwayne Harris for his senior year at East Carolina, too, who you guys obviously
know
very well. And yeah, Dwayne was mine, just like Sterling, for his senior year. And Dwayne made a really fast transition, you know, just like Sterling did.
I tell you what, Dwayne Harris chews nuts and bolts for breakfast. That is one tough cookie.
He
really is.
He's as tough as they come now. He is as tough as they come. Yeah, that's. I look like a damn good coach.
Oh, man. They love you here in New York. I'll tell you that right now. Hey, I one more question. Go ahead, Link. I'm
a Giants fan now. I'm going to have to get my Giants gear out now. So, yeah, that's good.
All right, Link. So, Lincoln Riley again, Oklahoma offensive coordinator. Final few seconds here. I got to ask you one final question, then, because you have just, like a proud papa, you have said so many wonderful things about Sterling Shepard, and I get that. But is there anything at all, any question or any room for improvement or development that you're not sure about that maybe is a little tentative in your minds where he may or may not succeed right away? Because I'm telling you right now, you're just glowing about this guy, and you're getting me all pumped up. I'm ready for opening day.
No, you should be pumped up. There's no doubt. You know, I think one thing for him is, and I bet this is a good problem to have, is he plays so fast and explosive at times. You know, at times he got a little bit out of control, and that was a big part, which, again, most guys, you don't even have to worry about that being a problem. But he's so talented and explosive that at times he has to learn to play, you know, within himself and not get out of control. But, I mean, yeah, that's something that's like having secretariat, and you got to just wind him down some. I mean, we can do that. And so he's going to be just fine. He's going to continue to develop. If he stays healthy, then I think he'll have a great career.
Coach, final question. I know you've only been in Oklahoma for a year, so I'm not sure how good of a feel you have for it, but I've read a lot about how, even though Sterling Shepard was a player at Oklahoma, the connection there for him was a lot deeper, given his connection with his dad, and he spent time there as a kid. Can you just speak to his football character and how important football is to him, and what a part of the program and the culture that he was at Oklahoma, not just when he was there as a player, but even growing up as a kid?
Oh, yeah. The stories, you know, you wouldn't believe it if you didn't know it was true. I mean, and he's just you know, you can just tell with him, even in the year that I was there, just the love and admiration that the people there had for him and that he had for the program. You know, it was just a step beyond always with Sterling, and I think that carried over into the passion, the way he played. He was such a good team guy. You know, he was a great senior leader. He really, you know, again, they had a tough year 2 years ago, and he, you know, with a lot of us came in new this last year, and he was one of the key guys that really bought in, which a lot of times seniors don't do or don't have to do, and he was a huge figure in that. But he's one of those guys that Oklahoma Sooner fans will be talking about for, you know, as long as they play football there. I mean, he's just almost a bigger-than-life figure there. And again, the history is great, but then for him to top it off and be the kind of person and player he was, that's what really makes it special.
Well, Coach, trust me, he's coming to a team that has a lot of history, a lot of tradition, and boy, if he's all in with Big Blue, the fans here will love him as much as the fans in Oklahoma do.
Absolutely.
That's
Coach,
awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you so much for the time, Coach. Good luck with your recruiting. I'm sure you guys are in the thick of things with spring games and practice. Yes. Whatever you guys are up to. Good luck this season, and we appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank
all right?
you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take
Thank
care.
You, Coach. That's Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma Sooner offensive coordinator. 10 minutes out of him. Great stuff.
Wow.
And he basically confirmed times 10 everything we've heard about this kid and in the little we've seen from him on the football field.
And, you know, we've talked to enough of coaches in our careers, John, to know when some of that stuff is coach speak and when some of it is kind of coming out of the playbook.
And we're being fed a spoonful of, you know what?
That stuff.
That does not
that
sound
stuff
that way.
Was straight from the meat and potatoes right there. Mm-hmm. You could tell this is a guy who really, really thinks a bunch about that player. And, I looked at tapes, John. He's really, really good.
He's really
but this
good.
Is even this has even got me just like bubbling right now. I just can't wait to play.
And you know what? And I fell into the trap, and I'll take the hit for this. You know, before the draft. And by the way, we'll now take your calls at 201-939-4513. We got 20 minutes. Your calls, rest of the way. Get in. Give us a call. We'll talk some Giants football, NFC East, Sterling Shepard, whatever you want to talk about. And fans, remember, Big Blue Kickoff 5 is brought to you by DraftKings. You never played on DraftKings. It's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. DraftKings.com. Enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports free to play. And what I was going to say, Paul, before I had my little intercession there,
right,
was I fell into the trap heading into the draft where, you know, fans are like, you know, what wide receivers, John, do you like? And I'm always like, you know, I think second round's a great spot to get a wide receiver. Whether you're, you know, maybe one of these top four or five guys will drop. A Treadwell, a Corey Coleman, a Will Fuller, a Josh Doctson, a Tyler Boyd, a Michael mm-hmm. Thomas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think those guys are good fits. And then I never really mentioned Sterling Shepard. I mentioned I thought he was a good player and I liked him. But a fan would often call or tweet and say, you know, John, you didn't mention Sterling Shepard. What's up? And I say, well, you know what? Everything I've seen and watched and read, he's a slot guy.
Yes.
And I feel like the Giants have a slot guy in Cruz. And, you know, Beckham is a guy that can go in the slot, too, if you want him to. He has that type of quickness. So, and I figured the Giants would want a different body type as their third wide receiver. Because you want to mix it up, just like they had Reuben Randall, who mm-hmm. was a different type of body than the other two guys.
Absolutely.
And I fell into that trap. But everything since we've picked him, from the guys that have played against him, the guys that have coached him, the Giants front office that watched the tape, they believe he can play outside. They don't think he's just a slot guy.
It's unanimous.
And it really is, to a man. Everyone is saying that to us. Given his leaping ability, his strength, he can make ball plays on balls in the air. They think he can play outside. And given he does have that skill set, and I knew that going in, and that's my fault, I should have been more educated than I was, he might have been my one or two wide receiver on the board on draft day, given his NFL-ready pedigree, ability to run the full route tree, all that stuff. So I really think the Giants got a super steal there. And now the interchangeability between Cruz, Beckham, and now Shepard is going to give Ben McAdoo all sorts of freedom
yeah.
and really make it difficult for opposing defensive coaches to figure out what corner you're putting where to match up with these guys. You know, a lot of times you can say, you know, let's say you're playing the Dallas Cowboys. They'll say, we'll put Orlando Scandrick in the slot. He'll cover Victor Cruz. Well, you know what? Now maybe it's going to be Shepard in the slot. Maybe it'll be Beckham in the slot on this play. The possibilities are endless.
And to put Dwayne Harris back into the number four slot, which is really, for him, a mismatch.
Yeah.
Him as the number four, he's a terrific number four.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an okay number three, but he's a really good number four. I don't know too many teams have a better number four than Dwayne Harris does. I thought Shepard was a second rounder, but the things that I wrote about him, quick, separation, hands, acceleration, all things that have been confirmed.
And separation is what I think is most important,
okay.
which is some of the reasons why I didn't like some of the other guys on top of the board.
But I also wrote in big letters, capital.
Slot.
Slot.
Right.
Because that's where I had him.
Which is why you had him below some of these other guys.
Okay. And,
right.
And my negatives were burner, because at times I did think he outran his passes, his routes. Which we've kind of heard now.
Well, the coach said he can sometimes go too fast and get out of control. And I think that
after I thought about it,
that
made sense.
Absolutely.
That made sense.
Yes.
And the other negative I wrote was frame to play outside. Not knowing if he had the frame and the strength and the physicality necessarily to match up with outside corners in the NFL who tend to be a little stronger and a little bit bigger
right.
than corners do in college. So, I mean, I had him pegged, but apparently I didn't have him pegged because everybody who really gets paid to do this for a living thinks that's not going to be a problem. And God bless him, because based on what we've seen here in a very short workout, albeit in shorts and T-shirts, he certainly looks thick. He certainly looks like he is not at all intimidated by the spotlight or by the challenge of going up against a corner who may be 6'1 and 210 pounds.
And he's got those thick legs that makes you think he can run after the catch, break some tackles, and do that sort of thing as well, where you might catch a 5-yard pass but turn it into a 25-yard gain.
Well, what did he say when he was asked about was it the physicality of the NFL? Somebody asked him something about the jump and playing outside, and do you think you're too small? And he said his favorite thing to do was weight training, getting stronger and weight training. That was like a huge emphasis for him. And how many wide receivers say that?
Not many.
I can't tell you the last time I heard a wide receiver tell me that that was like at the top of his priority list. I really can't.
I know a lot of guys that it wasn't on the top of their priority list.
That's for sure. So, I mean, when you got a guy who almost has, I hate to say this, this is a wide receiver. And I please don't take this as a negative. It's like he's got a running back mentality.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. The cut-ups I saw, he wasn't blocking in those cut-ups. It was all route running and receiving. I got a coach here now from Oklahoma, his offensive coordinator, telling me that he loves to run block.
And brought it up. It wasn't. We didn't ask him about it.
We didn't ask him about it.
No, he did not.
He offered it. Mm-hmm. He is going to block in the run. You're going to see him get after it. Are you kidding me? John, this guy's like a dream.
All right. Now I need to make you relax. See, now I've gone too far, and I've gotten Paul Dottino too excited.
Yeah, well, because we've now
This is why I need to be the wet towel all the time, because of you.
We have found out things that you couldn't see in the cut-ups, which are good.
But now I got to try to bring you down. I don't want to start dumping on Sterling Shepard, but you're going overboard now. You're killing me.
All I'm saying is I want to go out there Sunday. What is it now? It's Thursday. I want to play Sunday 1 o'clock. I want a game Sunday 1 o'clock.
Hey, look, and I will say one more nice thing before we get to your calls. We have some open lines, by the way. Get in, 201-939-4513. We'll get you in, folks. You'll go right on 10 minutes before we wrap up the show. I always make a point when fans call up, and this is even in training camp and for preseason games. Guys, this ain't real. You're not playing against ones. It's practice. It's a preseason game. Whatever. It ain't real. I preface my statement with that. Now I will say this. In rookie minicamp, he looked like the best player on the field, and it wasn't even close.
John, I don't know that let's just say I'm not going to say never. I have rarely heard the kind of confident accolades about a player so quickly upon arrival as I've heard about Sterling Shepard. And we didn't hear them even about Odell Beckham Jr. when he got here, because remember, when he had an injury and could not make the impression that this kid has made here.
The kid that
you've been around a while, too. I've been around a long time. You've been around a while.
Going back, Kenny Phillips, no. Steve Smith, no.
The only one I could say that I heard some really, really, really exciting comments about right after the first day was the quickness and the speed and explosiveness of David Wilson.
Correct. I agree with that. But that those are physical attributes they were excited about.
It wasn't
about him on the field necessarily.
He was just lightning fast.
Right. And I heard those same things about Beckham too, by the way. Yeah. But even though he wasn't practicing,
he couldn't see it.
Right. I mean, you didn't hear those things about Knicks even when he got here right away.
No.
You know what?
We're getting checks in every box on this guy.
You might be right, Paul.
From everybody we've talked to. I'm talking about scouts, coaches. We got former coaches. Every single box is being checked, and not just with a check, John, with a bold-faced Sharpie check plus. It's like a unanimous.
So you figure he's going to have more yards and receptions than Beckham, right? Offensive rookie of the year, pro bowler?
I'll tell you what.
Is that your prediction, Paul?
The other day on NFL Network, David Carr said that Sterling Shepard will be the rookie of the year. David Carr said that.
Let me put this
that's not me.
I don't think he's going to be the rookie of the year, because I think that's going to be Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas. I think it's just set up too well with that offensive line for him not to get the award if he stays healthy.
Yeah.
In terms of the receivers, though, would it surprise me if Sterling Shepard is the best receiver?
Like on the all-rookie team?
Of this class in year number one? No. That would not surprise me.
No, not after everything we've heard and seen.
To me, the guys in the mix, I think Laquon Treadwell, you got to think about a little bit.
And you know what, John? It's so hard for me to get excited about a player like this at this time, because I always say believe what you see, bless you, and I certainly want to see it in training camp.
Right.
But this is, wow.
I don't think Fuller is going to be great right away in Houston, because I think that's going to be a little bit of a process to get Osweiler up to speed. And, you know, Fuller is still a little raw in terms of some things. I think Treadwell will do pretty well in Minnesota with Bridgewater. But, again, I don't think he's a big play guy. I think he's more of a possession receiver,
right,
in my opinion.
Correct.
So I could see him having, like, 70 catches, but maybe only, like, 850 yards or something like that, because he's more of a possession guy.
Of course, now, if we're going to look at just stats,
right,
if Victor Cruz comes back to being Victor Cruz,
correct,
then
Shepard's
the rookie stats will be down.
I understand that. Corey Coleman, I think, is a more of a project, and the Browns don't have a quarterback to throw him the football.
I agree with that.
Think he might have a higher ceiling than Shepard, but I think the first year is going to be a tough slog for him.
Yep.
I think Tyler LeBoyne in Cincinnati is going to be a nice compliment away.
I think
to
he's
going to
be very good.
I think he might be the biggest competition in year one to Sterling Shepard in terms of best rookie wide receiver.
Actually, confession, I had Tyler Boyd rated ahead of Sterling Shepard in my draft preview.
Really?
I like Tyler Boyd a lot.
I had Boyd slightly below him, but I had them in the same neighborhood for sure.
Yeah, same neighborhood, but well, I had Boyd.
Again, but Boyd doesn't have the same – I think he's polished, much like Shepard is, which you like.
But they are a little different.
He's not as explosive out of his cuts. He's
no.
not as jitterbuggy and, you know, things like that.
No.
He's bigger, though. He's got some more size. He's got great hands.
Great hands.
But different type of player.
Good route runner, too.
Yes. 201-939-4513. All right, folks. It's you and us the rest of the way. Jeff in Rhode Island. What's up, Jeffrey? How are you?
Hey, guys. Hey, Johnny, Paulie, how you guys
Hi.
Doing?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing
Boy,
too good today.
That was a hell of an endorsement about our wide receiver, wasn't it? Sounds like this kid's going to be all pro his first year.
it's really hard not to be excited
Jeff,
right now.
I already have it set up. I have a couple of the offensive linemen outside the room here. When, as soon as the show's done, they're going to pick the Tino up. They're going to throw him into the cold tub just to calm him down, okay?
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. Well, the other day you were talking about some of the old-time Giants. Do you remember our number one draft pick and number 69 who wore number 89?
Freddie Dreyer.
Freddie Dreyer, yeah. He,
star
recall,
of TV's
he was a
Hunter.
Defensive end.
Freddie, I'll tell you something about Dreyer. He was really, really sharp off the edge. And while he wasn't the biggest guy, he was very slim. Especially
right.
slim in the hips.
Well,
he
was an actor. He had to be slim.
Well, later, yeah.
But he only played like at 245.
Slim in the hips, slim in the midsection, but he was strong for his size, and he was quick. And, of course, if he was disgruntled, and that's why they had to trade him to the Rams, because he was very unhappy with the losses here, and he couldn't stand losing, and he basically angered himself off the team.
Angered himself.
Well, you know, they've been a few of those over the years. But here's what I will tell you, though. Freddie Dreyer was a hell of a player, and the Rams were really happy to have him. He went to a Super Bowl with them.
How many years did he play in the NFL, Fred Dreyer?
I want to say a good 10.
Really? He played that many?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good player.
He was here for 3 years, and I always understood that Wellington Mara wanted to trade him because he didn't fit the so-called Giants image.
Well, and again, he got very disgruntled. You know, and he made it known. He wasn't afraid to voice his opinion.
Wow, you're right. Fred Dreyer played for the Giants from 69 to 71. Then for the Rams, he played from 72 to 81. So he had a 13-year NFL career, a Pro Bowler in 75. He was All-Pro in 74 and 75. First-team All-NEC 2 years. NFL All-Rookie team in 69. You know what? He had a more accomplished career than I thought.
No, he's a very good player.
13th overall pick in 1969.
And may I say, had some very ferocious sacks against the Giants when the Rams played them, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He had, as I recall, I remember one game he had 5 sacks against the Giants in one game.
That is correct. 104
career sacks. I just wanted to throw that out there, so I'll be coming up with some more gems as we go.
Thank you, Jeff.
Please feel free to dig them up.
Appreciate
I love
it.
Those guys.
And you know what?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. You know, 104 career sacks, that's even more impressive because they didn't even keep track of those.
Well, that's the unofficial total that
– That's the unofficial that they kind of put together, right?
Teams kept unofficial numbers.
Right.
And he was quite a playmaker.
8.5 sacks in his rookie year, 12 in 1970. That was when he was still with the Giants.
I mean, John
– 8.5 in 71, that's pretty good.
He was a really good player.
So he was like – Wow.
And then
impressed.
What happened was they sent him to the Rams. They had acquired
who'd they get for him? Do you remember?
Oh, golly. That I don't remember. It might have been a draft, just a draft pick. They were very unhappy with him, and he was very unhappy being here. But the Giants had Freddie Dreyer, and then right around that same time, Jack Gregory. They had got him from the Cleveland Browns, and Gregory had over 20 sacks 1 year. He was just a beast. He also was an all-NFL player.
Here we go. Dreyer was traded to the New England Patriots in February 1972 for 3 draft choices, a first, second, and a sixth.
Okay.
But he refused to report, and the Patriots had to trade him to the Rams. And they got there on draft day. They got their first-round pick and backup defensive end Rick Cash.
Yeah, great.
So Fred Dreyer was not a happy guy back then.
No, he was not a happy guy.
Because he forced his way out of here, then he forced his way out of New England, and then later on, when he was on Hunter, also, often angry on that show. Did you ever watch Hunter?
Loved it. Loved it.
My favorite part about Hunter.
He was Clint Eastwood light.
And I'll be quick here. We got one more call. I'll get to
you. Okay.
My sister loved Hunter, so we always had it on when I was growing up. And what I loved about Hunter, there was always a car going off the highway and falling off a cliff. And no matter how far the car went off the cliff, when it hit the bottom, do you know what happened? It would explode. It was like the classic stock footage Hunter chasing the guy, and the guy he's chasing flies off the cliff or off the guardrail and rolls down, and then the car explodes. And that's always the end of the episode.
Yes, yes.
Now, which
and invariably McCall would get into trouble, and Hunter would always bail her out.
Now, there were two. McCall wasn't his only partner. Wasn't there also a blonde that he had as his partner at some point towards
golly.
The end? I think.
I don't remember.
Or I might be remembering that wrong.
That may
know.
Have been the case at one point, too.
Did you like McCall? You're a big McCall fan?
I thought she was cool. I thought she was cool. But anyway, yeah, thanks for bringing up Freddie Dreyer, though. I appreciate that. Anyway.
I bet you thought he had you on that one, but you were all over it.
Dude, those are my guys.
Ralph in Manhattan. He's going to wrap us up today. Ralphie, how you doing, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
First time calling. Love the show. You guys do a great job.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in, Ralph. What do you got?
Hey, great. So I was wondering, with the potential pretty crowded backfield the Giants have going into the season, what do you guys think about the team giving Andre Williams some looks at fullback? He's he's got that build, and he's
not going to happen.
Fun, but seems not to have a knack of running into people.
He does. You know what? That's actually kind of funny. He does like to run into people sometimes. Might as well run into some defenders when he's blocking.
He's not that. He's not that. You know what? Andre Williams could be. He could be a Joe Morris type if everything worked out right. But
does he have the quick stat Morris had though?
Not quite. But he's quicker because he's just lost about 12 pounds and he's taken up martial arts. So he's hopeful that will help. I hope so, too. But let me make something very clear about Andre Williams, and you guys know that he's one of my favorites. Andre Williams is the kind of guy who needs an offensive line who's going to give him a decent hole. He needs room to begin his runs.
You're right about that.
Okay, he's never going to be one who's going to make something out of nothing. He's never going to be one who's going to get a bunch of yards after he's hit in the backfield. That's not Andre Williams' game.
Right, but if the offensive line gives him 2 yards, he can turn that into 4 or 5 with his power. The problem is that if the offensive line gives him -1 yards, he's probably going to lose -1 yards.
And that's the problem here. The Giants' run blocking has not been good enough the last several years.
No.
And so it does not play to his abilities and strengths.
Like, you put him behind, let's say, like the Cowboys' offensive line.
I guarantee you he runs well behind Dallas' line.
Like, for example, I think he might be a better running back than Darren McFadden in terms of a pure runner.
I think so, too.
Now,
I
don't think Darren McFadden is a Pro Bowler by any means. But, I think if you put him in the right spot, he can be successful. But, again, now he's starting now. Because, look, the Giants got a lot of people here. Now, if Andre Williams ends up being a guy that on game day isn't active this year, that wouldn't surprise me either, given all the guys on this roster and who might be healthy.
I think Andre Williams is going to be in for a fight because there are so many guys here. Remember,
absolutely.
Rainey's here, too.
Yeah.
Perkins was just drafted.
Darkwa.
They got a lot of guys. And you know what? He's at least taken the bull by the horns in the offseason. He's lost some weight. He believes he has maintained his power. Again, went to martial arts. I think he's done whatever he thinks he can do to improve his chances. But this is going to be a hell of a running back battle.
I think Ralph's right, though. I think the vision has to get better to a certain extent. And, a lot of times I've been crossing, Banks' ear a lot during the radio broadcast. And a lot of times they think that there are yards that he leaves out there because he doesn't find the right hole.
When a running back loses his confidence and when he doesn't think that the hole is going to stay, he thinks it's going to close up, then he's not going there. And I really believe that he had lost a lot of his confidence because the line play wasn't good enough. And when that happens, when you're a running back and you lose the confidence either in yourself or in the hole, guess what? You're not hitting it. Not going to happen.
Ralph, you got anything else for us?
Yeah, I guess if you have a minute, one more thing. I was wondering what you to get your take on the correlation. I know it's with a new coach and maybe a little different scenario going on, but looks like I think it's been the last 3 seasons the Giants have held training camp in East Rutherford versus up in Albany, which also correlates to slow starts where the Coughlin teams were typically known get out to 6-2, 5-1 starts. Do you guys see any correlation of that, and you think there's any chance that Coach McAdoo would want to bring everybody away from you know, their normal daily lives that they run and, you know, at home, to so to speak, versus going away.
Rob, I don't think there's a correlation with the starts and where they and where they do training camp, to be honest with you. I just think those Tom Coughlin teams that started fast, and you're talking about the 2008, 9, and 10 teams, if I remember properly, those three teams all started fast. The reason they started fast is they were good. That's because they were good.
They were better teams.
And frankly, the teams the last 3 years haven't been very good. And that's why their records are what they are. I think the Giants long-term would leave the door open, and I think that's the quote John Mara's made before, to going back to Albany. But the big thing has always been an indoor practice facility, because you don't want to lose days of practice, especially with the current CBA rules in terms of rain. So if they have an indoor practice facility where the team can go, I'm sure it's something they'll look at. What they'll end up doing, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process is with Ben McAdoo either, new head coach. If they like to get the players away, but the conversation can't start until they have an indoor practice facility.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate the call, my friend.
Thank you.
And I've not had that conversation with Coach McAdoo about what does he prefer. Well, I've never had that.
Quite frankly, I think if Coach had his druthers and he had a place where he knew he would have missed practice, he wouldn't mind being away either, Tom Coughlin.
Oh, that was always his big sticking point, and it's a legitimate one.
Yeah, of course. Because now, here's the problem, folks, now with the new CBA. The rules never used to be as stringent. So if you're out there practicing for 10 minutes and it starts lightning and it's rain and you go inside, you can make that up by doing a two-a-day the next day. It's not a problem. You can kind of go by the seat of your pants and figure it out.
I know.
Now, if you're – let's say you're in New Jersey this year and the Giants' indoor practice facility is under construction, okay? For one day, they can use it. It's under construction in this theoretical planet. You're out there practicing outdoors for 10 minutes. It starts to rain and thunder. You have to go inside for your players and the fans who might there be viewing practice for their safety.
Right.
So you got to get off the field. You know what? That 10 minutes, according to the CBA rules,
that's
full practice.
You can't
make that time up anymore.
You're done.
Which is why it made Albany so difficult, because you couldn't go by the seat of your pants and, you know, figure that stuff out. You have to have rest days every 4 days? I think you can't practice more than 4 days in a row, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Four was the
max.
So
they have all these new rules now, and that really makes the indoor practice facility essential to running a smooth training camp.
I know we have to run.
Yes.
And so I don't want to belabor this, but there's a young lady named Wendy who follows me on Twitter. She just joined recently, and I happen to notice on her homepage she had a couple of still photographs of the Giants in sneakers from the days at the University of Albany doing a walkthrough on the basketball court.
And that's what they had to do when it rained.
Yes. And I bring that up because of your conversation.
Great point.
And because, as media, we were never allowed inside the basketball arena to see those practice sessions.
You guys weren't on the balcony there on the rails?
It was not allowed.
Oh, okay.
When they went inside, we could not watch.
That. That's interesting.
That made me very angry. You don't like an angry P-Dot. That's not good.
And the problem with Paul, too, back in the day when he was only up at camp 1 or 2 days a week because of his other job, he used to work at the paper, so it's hard to drive up and down. He can't stay the extra day. So if he drives 3 hours
up,
and there's no practice,
destroyed me.
He wants to drive off the road on the way
destroyed
home.
Destroyed me.
Make everybody else happy, but it'll be a bad day for Paul.
It was not good. So for them to be here and being able to see practice every day makes me a very happy camper. But in any event.
But unfortunately for us, that means we have to see more of you during training.
That is true. But I just remarked to Wendy back on the Twitter, and if she's out there, thank you for posting the photos, because I remarked at how rare those photos are.
Sure.
And how cool it was to see the Giants in a still shot doing the walkthrough in basketball shoes inside the basketball arena at Albany. I'm thinking she must have been a student there at one point, because how else would she have snuck in and got those photos?
Well, yeah, she might be one of the girls wearing the yellow security jackets.
Had to be. Good thing Coach didn't see her snap the photos.
Is she a official member of the Paul Dottino fan club?
She's on my Twitter now, so I guess so.
Okay. Congratulations.
We'll see you.
He's up to 6. For Paul Dottino, I'm Josh Melk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a good one, everyone.